Welcome once again to the Radio Conference Call, a podcast for radio people, by radio people, and for folks that love entertainment, love music, and I'm very proud to welcome today Dick Poost out of Olympia. Dick, how are you?
I am doing just great, Randy, and it's a pleasure to be on your show. I love your interviews.
Well, Dick, you know, it's been thinking about having you on for a while, and we were finally able to pin down a date, and I thank you for your time today.
Well, you're most welcome.
Well, before we get to the radio career and quite an amazing career at KGY Radio in Olympia, let's start with, first of all, what are you doing right now, Dick?
Well, right now I'm still on the roster, and occasionally I do a little work for KXXO Mix 96.1 in Olympia, but I spent 50 years, 51 actually, at KGY. So it sort of became my home. I started there in 1959, can you believe?
She's got you. That was Patsy Cline. KGY time is 8:45. I'm Dick Poost, your host, until 11 tonight. The KGY Safety Serenade is on the air every day. Listen for all the details of the $100 U.S. savings bond to be awarded for the best safety slogan. The KGY Safety Serenade is brought to you by Mom's Kitchen, 303 East 4th Avenue, Prairie Supermarket on Schneider's Prairie, Walbert Brothers Tree and Spray Service Olympia, Joe's Tavern, 109 South 2nd in Shelton, the J.R. Doran Shell Service, 2005 Olympia Highway, North in Shelton, and Star Insulation and Roofing, 509 South Quince in Olympia. KGY waterfront temperature is 49 degrees. Do you know someone who is moving? You'll be doing a kind favor to handicapped people if you tell your friends about Goodwill Industries. Chances are they'll have many usable articles to dispose of. And Goodwill maintains jobs for handicapped people repairing for resale donated clothing, furniture, toys, and other household items. This is KGY going on 40 on 1240 in Olympia, first in Southwest Washington.
Surfing is the only life, the only way for me now, sir.
Amazing. I love it.
I don't think very many people work at one radio station for as many years as I did. I have a feeling I might have the world's record for that.
I have no doubt that you do, because I've never heard of anything close to that, Dick.
Yeah, I kept thinking I'd wanted to go to a bigger market. I wanted to be a big city DJ, but I loved Olympia so much, and KGY was such a wonderful place to work. I just never got around to leaving, and each day got better and better, it seemed.
Well, you were that really smooth voice of companionship on the radio there for so many years. Let's rewind, because I want to get to your KGY career and everything that happened starting in 1959.
I actually got on the air in, I think, 1960, or maybe it was 61. I'd have to check my book to see. It's in there.
As a matter of fact, I'm reading the book right now. It's called AM 1240, Life at a Small Town Radio Station. We're going to get to that in a second, though, but personally, outside of doing your part-time at Mix 96, what are you up to life-wise?
Well, I'm just sort of taking it easy and relaxing and enjoying being 81 years old. I just had my birthday not too long ago. I can't believe I'm that old, and I have no idea where the time went.
Welcome to my world. Same thing, Dick. I got to tell you, you know, it sounds like, well, you sound like you did when you were in your 30s, if you ask me. That's, I would say that's a great compliment.
Well, I don't have a shaky voice yet, and I think that's a pretty good deal. But and maybe it's just because I practice. Right now, I'm doing a few service club speaking engagements, more or less promoting my book, although I don't like to go out and hawk anything. If somebody wants my book, that's great. If they don't, that's fine too. Not everybody has time to read, and I'm just enjoying life.
I would say, Dick, that any broadcaster that I know would be riveted to your book, and I'm almost done with it. I haven't finished it yet. Like I told you before we went on, I'm kind of, you know, just relishing every moment of it, taking it all in. It's good stuff.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting how that all came about. All those years in broadcasting, maybe I just had a big ego, I don't know. But I saved every newspaper clipping, I saved every photograph, and I saved every little bit of information I had along the way. And I kept a diary. My grandmother gave me a diary, and when I was 19, I started faithfully writing in it every single day, never missed a day in all those years since I was 19 years old. I'm still keeping the diary. Every day I write in it. So I did this all along the way, and anything that happened at the radio station went in the diary. And every picture I took, I was faithful to write down the names of the people on the pictures and the date the picture was taken. And I had all this stuff just in boxes and wherever. And one day I was asked to give a talk at the Tumwater Rotary Club. And Dave Nicandri was the program chair. He's an author, has written many books, and is, in fact, he's the one who basically put together the Tacoma History Museum. He asked me to give a talk on Conelrad. And I thought, what? Who cares about Conelrad? As you may remember, Randy, that's the old before the EBS system came along, there was Conelrad, which warned people of a nuclear attack. So there were two places on the dial you needed to listen to if there was a nuclear attack on the United States, and that was AM 1240 and AM 640. Do you recall that, Randy?
I do recall that, and as I recall also, other stations had to shut off the air during that time.
That's right. And I still remember the TV ads for it. Let's see, how did it go? 640, 1240, Conelrad. And so people were supposed to tune to those frequencies if there was a nuclear attack. And KGY happened to occupy the 1240 frequency. I gave a talk on this subject, and people were just fascinated. And I kept all my material, and I thought, you know, maybe I should write a book. So that's how it started. I had all the material, and now I had the motivation to write a book.
Well, I was kind of wondering about, you had to keep a diary. I'm looking at a photo on your book right now, page 184, and it shows the shipping cargo container at the KGY FM transmitter September 2nd, 2009. I'm like, how are you remembering all these dates?
Yeah. I put all the dates down, and I had all this information. It took 6 years to, shall we say, dig it all out, organize it, and I spent a lot of time at Starbucks and at McDonald's having coffee and writing all this, and it was just a lot of fun, and the book sort of evolved along the way. And I had some help. I had what I call a writer's group, Dave Nicandri and Ken Balsley, Joe Illing, and we'd have coffee once a week and talk about everything. But we all had our little writing projects. Dave's a real writer. He has three PhDs, honorary, and he is considered the foremost expert on Captain Cook. And he writes real serious history, and I think he memorized the entire dictionary, and he uses all those words in his books. Well, my book isn't like that. I have a fifth grade vocabulary. so it's an easy to read book. But anyway, we encouraged each other. And not only that, but I had Darlene Kemmery, who worked many years at the Olympian as my production advisor. And she actually put the book together. And that's why it looks so nice. There are something like 600 photographs in the book. And every page almost has a picture on it, or two or three. And most are in color, or many of them are. And she put it together, so it's very professional, and I'm very proud of the book. It's kind of expensive. I'm out of the limited edition, which sold for $75, which was pretty much my cost. And now I have a soft cover version out, which sells for $55. But that's pretty much what I pay for it. It's self-published.
Well, you know, Dick, it's a labor of love, clearly.
It is. That's why I did it. There are something like 600 names in the book, and one of the reasons I wrote it was because I didn't want the people to be forgotten that I worked with. Barbara Carey is the main character in the book. She was my boss for most of the time, and I dedicated the book to her. She passed away about 15 years ago now, but there were so many wonderful people I worked with, and I just didn't want them to be forgotten.
You know, Dick, let's rewind. Prior to KGY, you grew up in Olympia, with the exception of, 9 years in, was it Minnesota?
Yeah, when I was a small child, yeah.
Okay, so what about your upbringing growing up in Olympia at that time? What was it like for you, and what was Olympia like, and how's it changed now?
Oh, my goodness. It's changed so much. Yeah, when we moved back, my parents moved back to Olympia. I was born here, but left when I was about 3 years old, came back when I was 12, and went to Washington Middle School. And then my parents bought a farm out on Cooper Point, 20 acres, seemed like a small piece of property from what I was used to in Minnesota. Farm life there was, the farms were a lot bigger. 20 acres was like, what is that? What can you do with that?
That was near where the country club is now, right?
Yeah, actually, the Olympia Golf and Country Club expanded, and the property, the golf course, adjoined my parents' farm out on Cooper Point. That's where I grew up. So before going to the radio station to do my shift in the evening, I'd have to milk cows. So Dad worked at Ralph's Thriftway, a local grocery store here in town, and we had some milk cows, and we had, at one time, we had as many as 1,000 chickens. That didn't work out too well, but
wow.
I gathered a lot of eggs. We had apples, and we had raspberries, and that's how I grew up, with my two brothers, Wes and Bob, younger than I am, and my sister Carol came along. She was adopted from Korea. We had a great life, almost a Leave It to Beaver type home. They say those don't exist. Well, pretty much it did for me.
Well, I was going to mention that Olympia wasn't a small town, but do you feel like it had the Mayberry and kind of Leave It to Beaver feel to it?
It did. When I started at the Rockway Leland building, KGY had several homes, and right now it's at the north end of the Port of Olympia. But when I started there, it was in the Rockway Leland building, where coincidentally KXXO is right now. Part of my duty was delivering a daily newsletter. It was a one-page sheet of the local news, and it went to the different restaurants around town. So when people went out for lunch, they'd read the KGY bulletin, which would be on their table in front of them, sort of like a placemat. And I would deliver this to the different restaurants around town. So I'd walk around, and yeah, it was clean. Nobody was asking for a handout. Nobody was sleeping in a doorway. Mm-hmm. It was a clean, bustling town. There was everybody went downtown to shop. There was Sears, JCPenney, Mottman's, Miller's. It was all there downtown, and I got to walk around and see all these places. It was just a wonderful place, kind of like Mayberry, only a little bit bigger than that.
All right, you know, Dick, what about, so at that time, the only high school was Olympia High School, correct, in the whole area?
Yes, and that's where I got my broadcasting experience. And I was a shy little kid and kind of sat in the back of the classroom. But the teacher, Mary Ewan, made sure everybody got a chance to go on the radio. So my first opportunity to go to KGY was, it was in the evening. We had two programs, actually. The high school class had one called High School Headlines. It was a program where we talked about what was going on at high school. It was like a newscast, full half hour of what was happening at Olympia High. Then we had a better program, in my opinion. It was probably an hour long, maybe 2 hours long, where we played record requests. All of us had a chance at that. And I remember how excited I was getting behind the microphone and saying, "And this goes out to Mary from Joe." And that was about all I said. And
then, don't forget the call letters.
Yeah, then a real DJ behind the glass would play the song. It was so much fun. So exciting. You know, Randy, how it feels when you know there's an audience. You talk into the microphone, and you can just kind of feel your voice going through the air into somebody's radio and people listening. You can feel that, can't you?
Yeah, and that's certainly part of the joy in doing what we do. So much of what we do, Dick, and I mentioned this about your book, and I feel like probably for both of our careers, it's a labor of love. You just love doing it, you know?
Absolutely.
And love connecting with the audience as well.
I don't think I ever talked to a big audience. When I'd get behind the microphone, I was always talking to just one person. Mm-hmm. Just one person, and I think that's what radio is all about. When you, Randy, you get behind the mic, you don't think of just masses of people out there. You think of one person that you're talking to.
And, you know, that's one of the early things we're taught in the biz. You're not coming on the air and going, good morning, everybody. How's everyone doing?
No, you never do that. But as you go through the book, you can see how our little radio station in this little town at the time, I think in there I have some statistics from early 1970s something. The entire Thurston County, I think, only had a population of 74,000 or something like mm-hmm. that. But anyway, you can see pictures of the crowds we drew. We had a cooking show at KGY, a cooking show, mind you, where a home economist would show you how to make macaroni or something. Mm-hmm. We drew two or three, I think it was 2,000 people. I have a picture of the crowd. St. Martin's Pavilion was, one side of it was just packed with people watching a home economist. And what I would do on stage, I had the Lake Fair Queen, I think it was. We'd give away sacks of groceries from Ralph's Thriftway. I mean, those were door prizes. People showed up for that. They listened to KGY. Everyone in town listened, and they showed up for all the events, the remotes. One of our biggest promotions, you're getting me talking, Randy. I didn't think I could talk so long on your show here. But we had something called the Key Hunt. We ran from, the late 60s. I don't know if we ran it into the 70s or not. I think I have it in my book. But what we would do, we would hide a key. It was actually there's a picture of it in the book. It was made out of wood, but it was in the shape of a key. And eventually we had three keys, one in Olympia, one in Lacey, one in Tumwater, and we would hide them. And nobody knew where the key was on the staff except for maybe the general manager and Barbara Carey, who wrote the clues as to where the key was hidden. And we would each day we would give out a new clue. And when Lake Fair began, during Lake Fair, there would be a ceremony where we'd give away a whole bunch of jewelry from Leroy's Jewelry. And we'd give out a clue each day, and the town looked like it was full of zombies as people searched for the key. One year was hidden under a walkway at Priest Point Park, and another year was hidden somewhere else. But anyway, it got so it was kind of dangerous. People were climbing over freeway overpasses and digging in the cemetery and things like that. And our attorney said, you're going to get sued for doing this. And so we had to stop doing it. But the whole town became involved. People were just crawling over everything looking for these keys.
And as we know, what a great contest. You have the element of keeping people listening to the next clue.
We did.
One of the many fun promotions I'm sure you did at KGY. Can you think of any other that stand out in your mind?
Well, that was by far the biggest and most memorable. Was there anything that even approached that? I think mostly it was just, we just had community involvement. Lake Fair was a biggie for us every year. We were always there for practically every event during the whole time. We did lots and lots of sports. Dick Nichols was our sportscaster. He became a local icon. You remember, Randy, back in the day when high school sports was what people listened to and wanted to know about. Uh-huh. Now we have the Mariners, we have the Seahawks, we have all the big major league teams. And not only that, but we can't rally around one high school anymore. We have, I don't know how many there are, 6 or 7 in the Olympia area. So you don't have one school to rally around anymore.
When you talk about being one high school, and it was the Olympia High School near the Capitol, by the way, wasn't it?
Right, that's where I went. It was right across from the Tivoli Fountain. That's where Olympia High School was located. Yeah, it was right downtown. And as a matter of fact, there was a building just down the street from Olympia High School called the Capitol Park Building, which was there until very recently. It's now the site of the State Patrol headquarters. But at one time, that was the where KGY had its studios. That was before my time. That was back in the 30s.
So, I mean, I know Tumwater and Lacey existed then, but all those kids went to school at the Olympia High School.
They did, yes. I think North Thurston was the second school that just opened up, I think, in my senior year. And not long after that, Tumwater had its own high school. Yeah, and now there are more.
Oh, yeah.
There are more. I'm not going to list them all.
I don't know. It seems like there's seven or eight anyway.
Yeah, something in that neighborhood.
Going to high school in Olympia, you know, through your high school years, describe that. I mean, in addition to the radio broadcasting course, what was life like, you know, going to school in Olympia? Did you guys have sock hops and, you know, dances and things like that going on?
Well, you know, a funny thing. Olympia, speaking of music, the Fleetwoods, a million-seller group, went to Olympia High School, and Gretchen Christopher and Gary Troxell and Barbara Ellis were classmates of mine. They became million-seller songs. Mr. Blue and Come Softly was their signature song.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it was we were playing that kind of music, but the Olympia High School auditorium was over the gymnasium. The gymnasium was down below the auditorium. It was a multi-story building. I remember we were in the auditorium one year. There was an assembly going on, so the room was packed. And there was music playing on the stage, and the all of us kids were sort of swaying to the beat of the music, and the floor started going up and down, up and down. And someone had to come on stage and shut the music off and tell us to stop. Apparently, they thought we were going to cave in the floor and we'd all drop down into the gymnasium.
When did you realize, radio, I love it. This is what I need to do. This is what my calling is. When did that come to your mind?
Well, I was not somebody with a whole lot of talent. I think maybe it was... I always enjoyed the moment, so I wasn't always looking too far ahead. But I remember walking into the KGY studios, going into the Rockway Leland building, and I went up to the top of the stairs. The studio was located on the second floor. And I went into the reception area, and a guy by the name of Don Jones, who is the operations manager and program director, met me, and I was only 19, and I said, "Do you have any jobs?" I didn't think I'd really get a job in radio, but Don said, "Well, what do you do?" I said, "I don't know. What do you got?" And he said, "Do you type?" And I said, "A little." He said, "Okay, well, I'll get back to you." So a week later, believe it or not, he called me and said, you want to work at KGY as our receptionist? $1 an hour. And I said, yeah. So I love being the receptionist. And you maybe know, I don't know where you started, Randy, but if you're the receptionist, you know, you see everybody who comes into the station, and you pretty much, you hear all the gossip around you, so you really learn a lot from sitting in that reception chair. And they gave me the job of traffic manager as well. I didn't go out and direct cars or anything, but that's where you schedule the commercials. And so I did that, and I typed a log every day. And it was a legal document, logs were. And so I couldn't make any mistakes. And my accuracy got really good, and I could type 60, 70 words a minute and turn out a good log every day. For 7 days a week. And radio was a moneymaker back then. Sometimes sponsors had to get on the waiting list to get on certain programs.
Mm.
Boy, would broadcasters love that today.
Huh? Exactly. You know, you brought up what Don had asked you. I started in my middle of my junior year in Raymond at KAPA Kappa.
Yeah.
And they would let me come in and kind of record in the production studio and stuff like that. Well, one Saturday I'm in there, just kind of messing around in the prod studio, and one of the owners, Bob Klonch, came in and says, "Randy, do you type copy?" That was his question, like you were asked. He says, "Do you type copy?" And I said, "Absolutely." But you know what? I thought he said, "Do you like coffee?" next thing I know, it's around 11 o'clock on a Saturday morning. I'm on the air at noon. The first thing I did was the Saturday noon to 12:15 newscast. It was horrible. Yeah, do you like coffee?
Yeah. Well, that's how you start. And I think one of the first things I did was station identification. And I was so nervous about it. We got to be down the way. Can you sit there? Can you do station identification? You know how important that is. We used to be, and I guess it's to a certain extent it still is. But in the old days, you had to do station identification at the top of the hour and at the bottom of the hour, I think, too. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I sat there and waited till 9 o'clock came. And I said, this is KGY Olympia. Wow. I had practiced saying that so many times.
you didn't forget the words.
I probably had it written down, too. But that's how it starts. That's how it starts.
Yeah, gosh. It was just wonderful, wonderful times.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I never got tired of it. Still, I'm not tired of it.
I know. Me, too. I'm about 43 years in, and I'm still loving walking into the building every day, Dick.
Oh, yeah.
And ironically enough, KXXO is in the Rockaway Leland building where KGY was in the late 50s when you got involved.
Mm-hmm. What do they say? What goes around comes around? I don't know.
I think it's something goes full circle.
That's it.
All right, Dick. Well, let's go here to leaving the Rockaway Leland building. And this was a huge deal when KGY, and if you've never seen the radio station, you got to look it up online or in Dick's book. This is on the Olympia waterfront, brand new facility built. It's on the pilings, two stories, a deck all the way around overlooking the water. And what was that like? Because you guys walked into a brand new building, all brand new equipment, and this was a showcase studio. And for many years, the whole station was just a showcase. One of the most unique locations for a radio station I personally have ever seen. Talk a little bit about that transition and how excited you guys were.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I remember Tom Olson, who owned the station, called the staff together in the Rockaway Leland building and made the announcement that we were moving to this new location. We were part of the Port of Olympia redevelopment program. And you might see some pictures in the book of how the port used to look. It was full of old warehouses and smokestacks, and it was a pretty dark, dingy place, and the port wanted to make it nicer. And so they made a sweet deal with Tom Olson to build a radio station down at the very tip of the North Point. And I saw the lease arrangement. The rent was $25 a month for the land. Of course, there wasn't much land. It was out over the water. But $25 a month is what the rent was. The port would own the property, and KGY would own the building. And KGY built this nice, as you mentioned, two-story building out over the water on piling. And I was, I started working there before the rest of the staff did, because the transmitter was put in there and I had to have readings every half hour. So for a while, I was the babysitter down there all alone in the building, brand new, fresh building. And every half hour, I would take a reading on the transmitter. That's what I did for a while. I don't know if anyone else did that or not, but that was my job for a while. And then when the staff moved down there, I had a brand new desk, and I was right there at the reception area greeting people as they came in. And it was a showcase, one of the most unique locations for a radio station probably anywhere in the world. People came from all over to look at it.
Now, Dick, to put a timeline on this, this is 1960.
1960, that's when we moved in. So exciting. Everything new, like you say, new chairs, new carpet on the floor. It smelled nice, looked nice, and lots of windows. We could see the Olympic Mountains to the north. When the tide came in, there was water underneath, water all around the station. We had a sort of a gangway to walk to the front door. And when I'd come in the early morning, when I did the morning show, we weren't on the air all night, so I'd come in and unlock the door I'd get there about 4, I guess, and unlock the door, and it'd be dark inside the building. But outside, sometimes I'd scare some, I don't know what they were, cranes or something, and they'd screech at me as I walked through the walkway and scare me to death. water'd be lapping around the pilings. It was just a wonderful place to work. Amazing scenery. People come in and they'd say, "Dick, how do you get any work done in this place?" Ships would go by, boaters would come up, people would come up on their motorboat and tap the, or their rowboats and tap the oar against our railing. Wonderful. Seals.
And, you know, like you mentioned, coming in at 4 a.m, it was kind of an isolated area, especially back then.
It was totally lonely, but wonderful loneliness. It was all yours. I was down there, and there's not a soul in sight.
Now, going from traffic manager to getting your first on-air stint, it seems like Tom Olson gave you a chance to do Sundays. But first, let's back. You guys had a consultant come in.
Yeah.
In 1960, and how did that go? What was that all about?
Well, everyone hates consultants because usually they want you to do stuff that you're not, that you don't want to do, that you, that's different. And so I think KITN was starting to make some inroads in the ratings, and Tom Olson was concerned about that. So he hired a consultant out of Oregon. Of course, if you're from another state, you have to, you know, be smarter than, you know, the local people. So he came in and he held a meeting and he says, "Okay, from now on, we're going to make sure our air shifts are standard." At the time, we were doing split shift. An announcer might work 4 hours in the morning, take a 4-hour break, and then come back and do 4 hours later in the day. I don't know if you can remember back that far, Randy, not. But
yeah.
But it was kind of weird. And the consultant said, "No, you don't want to do that. You need to give the announcers set shifts, give them names, and don't let them say anything. They say time, temperature, and the weather, and that's about all they say. No long ad libs, no boring elaborations on anything. Time and temperature, that's about it."
And in other words, don't connect with the audience at all.
Yeah, right. And so the only problem with this is it sort of left some gaps in the scheduling, like who's going to do Sundays? There was a 7-hour shift that needed to be filled, and he looked around the room and he said, "This format is so simple, even a trained monkey could do it." And he points at me and says, "How about that guy?" And he points at me. I go, "Yeah, I'll do it." I guess I was like a monkey. Yeah, I'll do it.
Oh my gosh! So that was you were on the air on Sunday from 7:30 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon, and that was it.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was station. It. Yeah, it signed off.
Yeah, and I brought along. We had some religious programming in the morning, and so I could take a break while those were playing a couple of half-hour programs. And so I fixed myself a sandwich to eat. For a while, it was tuna fish sandwiches, and I'd put the wrapper in the wastebasket. And some of the senior announcers said, "You know, this place really stinks. Would you please not eat tuna fish in the control room?" So I had Spam and cheese sandwiches the rest of the time, and I love Spam and cheese, Velveeta cheese.
Oh yeah, that's the good stuff. I'll tell you. All right, so how do you go from doing Sunday mornings to getting into that coveted morning show position? Did somebody leave and you got the opportunity? How'd you work your way to that?
Well, I think back then, and maybe still is that way, a lot of announcers always felt the grass was greener on the other, up the road a little bit. And so announcers didn't stay very long. So I started out with Sundays, and eventually the evening show opened up. So I did traffic, and I don't think I started until 7:30 in the evening, went till 11, and then did Sundays as well. In the evening, I got to play rock and roll. The rest of the time it was kind of a mixed format. And it just sort of, as people quit, I sort of moved up to from evening to afternoon, and then midday, and then morning. Only took about 3 or 4 years, something like that. I started the mornings actually after a stint in the military. I started in 1967. I started doing the mornings. Took over from a guy by the name of Charlie Bird, who was very popular. Charlie did the mornings. And then he went to Tacoma, I think, big market. I think Charlie, who's passed away now, but he did a children's TV show. I can't remember the name of it, but he dress up like Ranger Charlie or something and did it on Channel 11, I think, for a while.
So this is 1967.
That's when I started mornings
And
continued until January of 2011.
Kind of thinking about some of the styles of the era. You guys had the red sport jackets with the KGY crest on them. I've seen some pictures of that. That's classic.
Yeah. It was really an honor to wear the red jacket.
And so,
and grill cream on my hair.
A little dabble, do you?
The girls will love to run their fingers through your hair. That's greasy stuff.
Yeah, that greasy kid stuff. You know, that's what they said. So you're in the mornings, you're solidifying yourself as a major personality at really the primary radio station in the capital city. How much of that was about getting out to Lake Fair and getting out and making personal appearances for grand openings and things of that nature?
I think I went to more events than I can count. Probably the most exciting one was getting to MC the Bob Hope show. When Bob Hope came to town, he came to the St. Martin's Pavilion, I think it was 1974, and I got to MC that and work with a superstar. A lot of people don't even know who Bob Hope is today, but older people do. And working with him was probably one of the most exciting chapters of my life.
Well, you know, Bob Hope, and certainly an American icon with his movies and his USO tours. What was he like? Was he seem very nice when you see him on TV? Was he that way in person as well?
I'd have to hedge a little bit on that, maybe because he was such a big star. He wasn't able to, he would have been mobbed by his fans. So when he showed up at the St. Martin's Pavilion for rehearsal night, we were all waiting for him. It was dark, and he didn't show. We were wondering, where in the world is he? And someone went to the back door, and there he was all alone. He brought Miss California with him. The two of them were standing at one of the side doors in the back of the pavilion trying to get in.
Oh, my gosh.
And we finally got him inside. And he was very businesslike, let's put it that way. He was very businesslike. And when he left the pavilion after the show, he didn't hang around. He had a police escort and went straight out of the pavilion. And he didn't hang around and socialize.
Maybe he stayed at the Tyee that night.
He did stay at the Tyee. That was where he stayed.
Yeah. Is that right? That was just a guess.
No, that I'm pretty sure that's where he was, yeah. I didn't hang around with him. I did rehearse with him. And at the end of the show, he came over and shook my hand. And I'm proud to say I'm the only person that he shook hands with before he left. So I'm very proud of that. I was so sweaty. I was embarrassed. I was so nervous that I was just a pile of sweat. And I'm sure he thought, wow, yeah, I got to go wash my hands.
You know, was it a moment of kind of being semi-starstruck or anything like that?
For me, it was, yeah. Yeah, I was, but it worked out well. I was the MC and introduced the show, and St. Martin's Pavilion was, I think there were 5,000 people in there. It was jam-packed. And when I said my name, hello, I'm Dick Poost, the crowd roared applause and whistles, and I couldn't believe it. Wait a minute, I'm not the show. I'm just introducing the show.
That's right.
Yeah, it was very gratifying, very gratifying.
Well, Dick, I would say that you've had more of an impact on the locals and your listeners in the KGY listening area that probably more than you know. You're a constant companion on the radio every morning, school closures, lunch menus, you know. Can we kind of jump around a little bit here? We're just two guys talking here.
It's your show.
Okay, so I want to go back and I want to remind you of something. Family picnic with Julie Morris. Her dad was the AD at Olympia High School, right?
That's right.
So talk about that day. Quite a day. Because you had your 1957 Chevy.
Yeah, Julie came down to the station occasionally, and I'd take her home. And she lived on the west side, not too far from where I live today on the west side. And her dad was athletic director. And if you know anything about me, Randy, you know I'm not an athlete. I learned to run. I learned that I could run and run forever. Can't do it now with an artificial hip and a artificial knee, but I used to run. Anyway, I dated Julie a little bit, and one day she invited me over to her house for dinner, and her dad is the athletic director, big macho guy, nice guy, but I couldn't do anything athletic. I mean, he was into football and all this stuff, and Julie invited me one day to go on a picnic with them. I think it was at Point Defiance in Tacoma. And when it was time to take Julie home, there was a carnival along the way. And so we stopped there to go on a ride. And it was a weeknight. There was hardly anybody in the amusement park. And the guy running the whatever the ride was that we were on, we were the only people on the ride. And I said, I bet you can't make me sick. And so I got on the ride and he just let it go and go and go and go. And sure enough, I got sick.
Oh,
and I jeez. Yeah, I threw up.
Oh, my gosh.
And it didn't, I'm not sure what Julie thought when I had to run behind a tree and throw up. And then on the way home, somebody rear-ended us in my 1957 Chevy. Nobody got hurt, but my fender got all smashed in. It was a guy who hit me from behind while I was at a stoplight. You know how it is.
Oh, I do. Yeah. I mean, that car at that time, that I've seen the pictures.
Oh, yeah.
That was your pride and joy.
That was my pride and joy, and there it was with a dented fender. It was still drivable, but who wants to drive a gorgeous 57 yellow Chevy convertible with a smashed-in fender?
No one.
Well, I fixed it. Got it fixed. But.
Now, Dick, you must have had some great guests in studio over the time at KGY.
One of the most gratifying times, I had Governor Christine Gregoire down at least once, maybe a couple of times. And one time, there's a picture of her in the studio there. And after opposing, she pats me on the back and says, "Nice job, Dick." And you know how good that feels when it's coming from a governor?
Mm-hmm.
It feels really good.
And how many governors did you go through during your beginning of your KGY stint? Was before Governor Dan Evans, wasn't it?
Yeah, there are governors, not me personally, but I think there's a picture of Governor Mon Walgren. Well, here's a story I should tell you about. The President of the United States, Harry Truman, went into the station in about, I think, 1948. He went into the Rockaway Leland building to record a message that he was about to, I think he was sending it down to San Francisco or something. Yeah, the President of the United States himself was in the studios. Now, I wasn't there then, but I can only imagine what it would be like to have the president in your little radio station.
Oh, my gosh.
Really?
Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, yeah, he used to hang out in Olympia. He was friends with, let's see, who was the governor at the time? But he served with our governor when the two of them were in Congress together. They played pinochle together. And so he came out to Olympia a couple of times for vacation, President Truman.
Harry Truman slept here. No, not really.
Yeah, well, yeah, actually, yeah, he supposedly he spent a night or two out on Johnson Point in a cabin.
A lot of great personalities come through KGY over the years. Do you mind if I throw out a couple of names and get some commentary?
Well, no, go ahead. See if I know who they are.
Well, a wonderful man that I worked with in Centralia, oh gosh, mid-2000s, Bill Carter.
Oh, yes, Bill Carter, a wonderful, wonderful guy. And I haven't been in touch with him recently. I hope he's doing well. I understand his wife passed away not too many months ago. But, yeah, Bill replaced me when I went into the Army. I left KGY for a while in 1962, and Bill replaced me. And then Bill left shortly after I came back. And Bill went into television. He was a TV anchor man for a while.
Yeah, outstanding individual. I remember him well.
Yeah.
He
wonderful
was,
guy.
Did a lot of stuff at KELA in Centralia when I was around.
Oh, yeah. I love that guy. And I wish I could contact him again because I'm not sure where he is.
I do have his number. I'll share it with you when we get off.
Oh, I'd love that. Yeah.
Legendary newsman, Bob McLeod.
Yes, I do a whole chapter on Bob in the book. we worked together for many, many years, and Bob was kind of a private guy. And as I'm writing my chapter, I realized I didn't really know him that well. And we had coffee together and shared some of his favorite memories. And one of his was a memory of the Indian leader, is it Charlie Frank?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. Okay. Sure I got the right
yeah.
first name there. But anyway, Bob had quite a few memories of him, which are in the book.
What made him the best newsman ever to work in the Olympia market?
You had to respect the guy. And when he said something, it was almost like gospel truth. Mm-hmm. If Bob said it, it must be true.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob spent a lot of time attending meetings, courthouse, county commission meetings, city council meetings, even went to planning commission meetings. And if you've ever been to any of those, they're really, really, for most people, they'd be really boring. And Bob seemed to really enjoy that. And then he was able to absorb the information, pick out what was important, and boil it down into news stories. And so when people listened to KGY News, they knew what was happening in town. And Bob was able to do that. And he did it for many, many years and was, you're right, one of the most respected news people we ever had.
You know, let alone KGY, but really in the whole Pacific Northwest, he was known very well around the radio arena.
Yes, he was. Part of that was the number of years he was there. I remember he started when I was doing the afternoon show. I can't remember the year. It's probably in the book. When I saw him walk through the door, I had heard that we were hiring this new guy to do news, that he had just graduated from the University of Washington. And he came in, he looked, you know, he didn't look like a kid, but I had no idea he was 40 years old when he started his career at KGY. He was beginning a second career. He'd been a salesman, I think, for a billboard company. And so he was making a complete career shift from billboards into news. And he just fell right into it and just loved doing it. And after he retired from KGY, not too many years went by before he was elected as a county commissioner.
And, you know, talking about Bob's retirement, there's another well-known name that was KGY News for many years, John Tennis.
Yes, John took over when Bob left, and I think John's in living in Oregon now. John was a legend of his own.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have too many stories about John in my book. We weren't able to connect to do a chapter on him, but he's in the book.
You know, one of my favorite people in the world, and he's been gone for, gosh, a dozen years anyway, maybe 15, Carl Cook.
Carl was unique. He knew music. Yeah, he passed away a number of years ago, and fortunately I was able to get him back for we had a promotion celebrating one of our anniversaries anyway. We had it in 2008 or something like that, and Carl came back for a reunion-type show. I had a number of DJs back on the air, PJ Kirkland and Carl and others. Yeah, Carl was he was an icon in his day.
He
had a lot of fans.
That is a Carl's laugh is one you'll never forget.
Yeah. He was a good photographer, too.
Absolutely. And he knew a lot about nature and birds and crows. And
Yeah.
Pretty outstanding guy. He didn't take exception to what I called him, the old hippie.
Yeah, that's probably a pretty good description of Carl. And he was a smoker. So every time they'd have these smokeouts, he would go on a crusade on the air and quit smoking on the air. But wasn't too long after he successfully quit that he successfully started up again.
Yeah, you know, along those lines, it was very common. I mean, even we haven't touched on this yet, but your first real radio job, if I may, was at Kitten 920 as the janitor. Yeah?
You are right. I went down to the employment office, and they said, well, you know, as an I was 18, I think, at the time. As an 18-year-old just out of high school, we don't have any radio jobs for you. But we have this job at KITN carrying out the garbage. I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They were located on Columbia Street downtown, yeah.
Before they moved into their showcase studio later on, right?
Well, they had several locations.
Did they?
But yeah, their best one was in the Capitol Center building,
yeah.
Right up at the top there.
So back to a couple of these names, one of the sweetest gentlemen that I've ever met, and a guy that really had radio in his blood, Mr. Larry Bailey.
Yeah, Larry has passed away too. I hired him twice, but the second time I hired him, he walked in just at the right time when I needed somebody. And I could remember saying, when can you start, Larry? Of course, he could start right away. And when he left the building, he did a little happy skip as he walked out of the building. And it made me feel so good to know that he was happy and I'd made him happy. So, yeah, love Larry.
A lot of people wore numerous hats, including engineers like Tom Trotzer, I think. Didn't he do afternoons and he was your chief engineer and operator as well?
He did. Yeah, he wore two hats. Tom was... He's an amazing guy. I have basically a whole chapter on him in the book because he basically built the FM. He did everything. I mean, he except get the license for it. He he found the property. He did everything. Tom was, shall we say, an in-house engineer, and not very many small radio stations had their own engineer on staff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I want to get to the FM signal and the license for that coming up here in a bit. I wanted to mention we were talking about personnel at KGY. Probably the first female on-air personality was at KGY, Jessica West.
Jessica was, she had an incredible personality, and unfortunately for us, she was snapped away by KXXO, Mix 96.1. I think she was their first, on their first announcing staff roster. But yeah, that was kind of a blow to us when she left. She was so good.
1991, the year, someone fires a sniper rifle or a high-powered rifle at the station? What?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I don't know if I have time to tell you the whole story, but I didn't really find out about it until I went to the police station that morning, and they said, you know, somebody took a shot at your radio station last night. And yeah, somebody with a high-powered rifle, the bullet went through our KGY van, which was parked in front of the tower, went through the passenger side door, through both armrests, out the driver's side door, through the front window of the radio station, and chinked the wall inside, and then called the radio announcer who was on duty and said, next time I won't miss.
What?
Yeah. Never did find out who did it.
Oh, my
God. Never did.
How did that change the way you guys do, like you coming in at, you know, 4 in the morning, how did that change your thought process?
Well, I went out and bought a little pistol and got a permit to carry it, and you'd have laughed. I'd pull up in the dark. It'd be totally dark outside the station, and I'd get my little pistol out, and I'd hold it in my hand, and I'd be waving it around, and every little movement of a bush or something. No one was ever there, and I never, ever fired the pistol, but I carried a pistol to work with me. And so did some of the other DJs.
Yeah, I heard that PJ had it kind of sitting next to the turntable.
Yeah, he had a giant something out of the movies or something.
Yeah, revolver or something, yeah.
Yeah. He had it sitting there right in front of everybody.
All right, Dick Poost with us on the radio conference call this time out. A long time. Now, was it 47 years doing the morning show? 67 to what?
I think 14? It's 46, 47 years doing the mornings, and at the radio station, total time about 51 years.
And not only part-time Sunday announcer, afternoon, nighttime, morning show,
traffic,
receptionist. And you also became general manager. We'll get to that in our next chapter.
All right. Sounds like a deal.
Dick, we sure love you. And again, thanks for taking time out for the radio conference call, and we'll talk to you again very soon.
A lot of fun, Randy.